We're podcasting from Chico, California, and home of the world's largest functional yo-yo. This is Cinema Stash Rehash Movie Podcast with Jason, Wyatt, and Chris. We talk about 80s and 90s movies and provide insights about them you didn't know you needed or wanted. So sit back, relax, and join us. We're just about ready to get started.
You're all robbers.
The best, Mr. Hood.
Jolly good. And you're a robber, are you? Jolly good.
Welcome back, and I hope you brought your phone booths wait, no, that's a different movie. No, seriously, though, this movie is another time travel movie, but we have maps in this movie instead of phone booths.
That's right.
And we're talking Time Bandits here. We're the Cinema Stash Rehash. I'm Wyatt Campbell, and next to me is Jason McClendon.
Hello.
And then across is Chris Matson.
Once again.
And then filling in the void between Chris and Jason is our friend Josh Funk.
Hey. Welcome back.
So
there's no void between me and Jason. What's up, Jason?
No, there's no void.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, much love. But no, I thought the same thing about that.
I'm glad you guys love each other. So anyway, this movie.
More than the movie, I'm going to guess.
This movie, to me, was like a classic. I'm surprised neither of you had seen it. Josh, had you seen it when you were a kid?
Not until a few years ago.
Okay, so.
And I saw it 4 nights ago.
Yeah, so, I saw it today for the first time, so.
So total misconception to me that this was like a classic.
But you know, it's funny.
I thought it was different.
My wife grew up with this movie, and I've known a lot of people who have grown up with this movie, and I was surprised that this one slipped through the cracks for me as well. Because honestly, the movie for me, there was some weird aspects to it, like just crazy, but I actually really enjoyed the film overall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot going on in that movie.
Well, it's directed by Terry Gilliam, and he was famous before this movie for doing Monty Python.
Yeah.
Directed one of the Monty Python movies.
Hence John Cleese. That makes sense now, I guess.
Yeah, and since...
Absolutely.
And then after this movie, he did Brazil, which was a pretty popular movie, which is another obscure movie that I'm not sure if any of you guys have
seen. No, I've never seen that either.
But it's more adult than this and weirder than this.
Oh, okay.
So, but that's his style, it seems like, he's good at whimsy, he's good at weird, and he's good at, you know, presenting at least a decent movie, you know, I guess. I mean.
Unlike David Lynch.
Yeah. That's, you know, and that's one thing I was thinking. I was like, this movie is similar to Dune, which we watched recently, where you're kind of confused right off the bat, but in Dune, they try to explain it. They just do a shitty job. In Time Bandits, it's more like. There's a cold open with basically a kid who's not happy at his house. And then the next thing you know, dwarves are coming through his closet and they take him with him. And there's not much more explanation other than they're running from like a floating head. You know?
Second floating head movie we've done, which was Starfighter, was the other floating head movie.
That's true.
Yeah. But no, I thought that was really funny. The opening scene was when you can clearly tell the parents literally don't give a shit about their son.
I don't remember like any of this when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because it's like you glaze over those things, you know, when you're just waiting for the action. But like, his parents are shitheads.
Yeah.
And he's like a history buff, and it's kind of like you can see he's that.
Talking to their parents, and the parents are just ignoring him. And finally, a timer goes off, and the dad goes, go to bed. You know, that's it. But that was, I didn't know the direction of this movie. And then as soon as that horse just plows right out of that.
Which,
closet.
By the way, they like don't really explain as to whether or not that was actually like a time hole or was that his mind, because at the end he wakes up and it's kind of
right.
Like,
but then he has the pictures. But either way, I mean, that was the moment where I go, holy shit, now I know
confusing
where this movie is going and like what to expect from this movie after that closet scene, because like I'm sitting here going, how the hell is he going to get to this world and how is this going to,
you know? I did not have any idea what the storyline of this movie was. Once it started, I was like, what the shoot am I watching? And then there was, you know, I was excited to see Kenny Baker pop out of the closet. That was cool. That was a little,
the introduction of the dwarves was fantastic.
That was decent.
I'm sorry. What term are we using here? I'm just going to call them little dudes.
I think
all
they
the
call
through.
Them dwarves in the movie.
They do, so I guess we can get away with that now.
Yeah, I think they're
politically correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, it's
on
like
all
well,
that,
medieval, not medieval, because they were fake.
Yeah,
fake times. They call them dwarves. I mean,
true.
I played a dwarf on Warcraft. So.
So, but yeah, I mean, they come out, you know, and they got all these weaponry in, and they're shooting the shit up.
Dad didn't hear it, apparently.
Yeah, the introduction into the dwarves were great.
Well, first they're like scared of Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, he's...
They think he's that floating head.
And then they like, yeah, and then they grab the tour. You know, I mean, it's just all this weird confusion. And then he gets swept away with them. The next thing you know, they're in what, like Italy in the 1800s or whatever.
Well, don't forget. I mean, I thought one of the best parts of the whole movie was right before that, where they're pushing the wall.
Oh,
the wall.
Oh yeah, totally. That whole sequence is great.
That's why we got amazing. You here, Josh. Is that we can't, cool. we can't glaze over those special effects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Please don't. Yeah,
yeah. Cool, because that sold it for me. Like I was hooked right there. I actually,
that was pretty cool.
Yeah, because they're basically pushing the bedroom wall, and it just keeps going and going, and they're all putting all their strength into it, and the wall just keeps going and yeah. going, and it was so surreal. It was amazing. What you have
stolen from me. Oh, you're yeah. just like, holy shit, what is going on
yeah.
here?
Yeah, and
I couldn't stand Pansy and the guy. I don't like seriously.
Oh god, Pansy.
Like what's
Pansy
the point? And, what's the point of those characters throughout the whole movie?
Because this guy's a Monty Python guy, Terry Gilliam. Like it like yeah. it all goes back to that whole,
I mean, it was very, yeah, that scene was very Monty Python.
Monty Python.
I don't know.
Yeah, so we're making up words.
There was a couple scenes that were pretty Monty Python-y for sure.
Yeah, and
that was one of them. I didn't understand. I guess you're right. I guess if that's his style, he's gonna put that in there. But I don't know. It was a silly part.
Yeah,
the Robin Hood part was as well. It's like just,
oh my god, that was the best though. Like John Cleese coming out with his like. His condescending Robin Hood, where
he's, oh hello,
jolly good, jolly good.
So no, thank you very much, thank you.
How long have you been robbing? And he's like 4 foot one. He's like 4 foot one.
That is quite a long time.
That is a long time. Yeah. Jolly good, jolly good.
How long have you been a robber? 4 foot one. Good lord, jolly good. 4 foot one.
Yes.
Well, that is a long time, isn't it?
My favorite part of that whole part. Jumping ahead just a little bit though, but yeah, it's like, you know, they're giving all the goods to the poor, and like that one dude's just socking everyone in the face.
He's like, is this necessary?
There you go.
Yes, well, there we are. Congratulations. Well done.
So. Yeah, he can't understand what he's saying.
Yeah, he's like
necessary. He's like, what's up? So what he say? He's like, yes. I was like, okay.
I loved the Napoleon scene though. I mean, going back a little bit, but I mean, the whole, you know,
yeah,
because I love Ian Holm. Yeah. As an actor, and you know, and him playing Napoleon, I guess actually he played Napoleon before, which was, you know, perfect. Mm. I guess but I love that whole thing because he was obsessed with everything small, because you know, that's why he loved the puppets.
He
and
was,
then like
he was I'm naming
like,
all the,
and then who the hell shot the puppeteer, because he just like dies all
yeah,
of a sudden.
I
just
didn't
like
get that.
And I mean, because Napoleon liked him, so I know he didn't shoot him, but so I mean, and then but that whole scene, I love Ian Holm, so that was great.
Yeah,
so
for a kid's film, that's pretty dark. There's a few moments that are
yeah,
like,
this is described as a kid film, and I'm yeah, like, yeah. There's no way this is a kid film.
that's how they were viewing it when they were making it.
Yeah, like Terry Gilliam actually directed it at a low angle just to give the perspective of either being a dwarf or a kid in this.
Well, I mean, it was a story. It was a story of a kid. So I mean, it was a hero story of the kid. So
yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, I didn't. I'm not gonna say I like this movie a whole lot. I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know. They didn't really explain much of anything. I think it was more, it was like a religious story, which is,
it did take a while,
which is cool.
To
I mean, there's a god and a devil, and then I'm guessing the dwarves were little angels,
supreme
maybe.
Being and yeah. evil.
Well, they talked about creating the earth in 7 days. I mean, it went fairly biblical on there. On the,
a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to think of what the little people were, as far as like on the god and creation
scale. Like, yeah, that's
scale.
What it was. They were giving you tidbits of info, like. Throughout, so it's like I didn't understand like how they got there. That's fine. And then after Napoleon, when he's drunk enough and he falls asleep or whatever, and they go, you got 30 seconds to get to the portal, and it takes them 5 minutes to really get there.
Yeah,
and you're just like, yes, their perception of time is great, but they're just giving little bits of info, because like I didn't understand where the portal and how the map was working, and every time they pull out the map, you get a little bit of information, like, you know, they can find out where certain portals are going to be, when they're going to be there. And so, I mean, it was confusing. I agree with you on that. But
I think it was intentionally confusing. I think you're supposed to kind of have the point of view of the kid who's like, you're not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
It's very energetic. You're along for the ride. You're figuring it out as you go along.
True, because they know what the hell they're doing.
They know what they're yeah. doing. They don't care if he knows. They're just yeah. kind of I don't think we ever are supposed to really understand the map. I think later you see the kid takes a photograph of the map and they kind of piece some stuff together.
That's yeah,
like the most of it.
That's
I ever
that's true. That's true. But no, I actually really enjoyed. What should we call him? I called him like the sorcerer guy. I mean,
evil
kind of was evil. Is that what is that what they called him?
Technically, yeah, technically the devil. I don't know if they call him the devil, but
they don't call him the devil. He's cast as evil.
Yeah. Okay, okay. But I love the whole dynamic of that character.
Him and his minions, like
his
minions
are strange.
When he's like, when he's going off and talking about himself and compared to the supreme being and.
He knows nothing of the potential of the microchip or the silicon revolution. Look how he spends his time. 43 species of parrots. Nipples for men.
And then one of these guys like, but he created you.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is now I think about it, the more and more I think about it, the more and more it's Monty Python to me.
Yeah, especially that part right there.
That whole scene, well, yeah. Well, sir, but you just said... And he's like,
Terry Gilliam was trying to get away from Monty Python, or the connection with Monty Python, but yet, he still had John Cleese, and he had... who else was in it? Not all of the members were in there.
No.
I can't think right now.
The comedy style is the same, too, though.
But,
I mean,
but yeah,
the way they talk and...
But you also see some themes... and kind of aesthetic choices that carry on into later Gilliam films like 12 Monkeys and the Zero Theorem with like the, I don't know what we're calling them, but the devil and his people, like they've got these kind of like see-through plasticky.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And, I didn't think about that.
And a lot of that stuff carries over. So it's fun to see a director this early on and the things that carry over into later into their career.
He still uses some aspects of older films.
I did like when they got into the scene with Sean Connery. I did like that whole scene, the whole thing. As far as from when he gets there to when they get through the time wall. I did like that scene.
Yeah,
it started out with a pretty cool fight between him and a cow guy, which I really liked. That was pretty cool to me.
The cow dude was pretty bitchin'.
Well, really. I thought it was supposed to be a minotaur, but it was tough to tell because he just takes the head off. It's not like he cuts it off.
Yeah, because he's playing Agamemnon.
I thought it was a big dude with a cow head on it. Like that was his helmet. And
well, yeah, I mean, I think that's what it was. But
it wasn't an actual minotaur.
No.
I did like that scene. I mean, Sean Connery's a badass, of course, but
yeah,
as far as history goes,
is he still in the cupboard?
Of course he is.
I don't know. We haven't talked about him in a while.
I'm sure he has an opinion on this movie.
Winston the Ogre was cool. I liked the whole scene with the ogre in the back, pulling his back, stretching his back out, and how he enjoyed the pain relief of the
back ogre
stretch.
And Mrs. Ogre, who's turned on by him being
so there was
ogre.
A couple parts. Yeah, there was a couple parts I did enjoy as far as like continuing through with the movie. But overall, it was just I don't know if Jason, you've never seen it, so you don't have this nostalgia. So I'm interested in getting into the ratings later. Because neither of us have seen this one, but I don't know. I guess I watched it and it was fine. It was a cool little movie.
Yeah.
Like it was a fine movie.
I think what I actually really enjoyed more, I mean, because finding out more about this film, it's like it only had a $5 million budget when the film that we did last time with all the stop go had a $15 million budget. And none of them were flops, but I mean.
How'd this movie do?
I think I have it here actually.
I didn't write that down.
Trying to make sure that I do that. It was a $5 million budget. The opening weekend, it did $6.5 million. So it already exceeded its open weekend. And it turned out grossing 42, almost 42 and a half.
And it was produced by George Harrison from the Beatles.
Yes, it was. I was going to mention too. Yeah, because nobody wanted to make the film. You know what I mean? So then he pulled it against with
another. How'd they get Sean Connery in it?
Well, we should probably ask him. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Let's do that. Should we knock? Because last time he just kind of burst it out. Is he listening, you think? So let's...
Yes.
Hey, Sean. It's good to see you.
Good to see you,
Chris.
Thanks
for coming back. I asked a question. I guess it's just better to ask you.
Okay,
fire away. How did you get this part? I guess you need to see... We're doing Time Bandits.
Oh, you guys are doing your little podcast again.
you remember doing Time Bandits?
Oh, of course.
You remember that? It was a while you were young.
I was... Yeah, I was young.
Yeah, you're pretty young.
Yes, 1981. I was young.
How'd you get the role? Do you remember?
It was probably doing a favor, Chris. I don't remember making much money off that movie.
You couldn't have. I don't know why you did it.
Yeah,
I didn't really enjoy it.
Budget. I must have gotten gross. But
I think half that was probably your paycheck.
So Terry Gilliam directed that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we've been talking. Yeah.
I knew the producer, and he coaxed me into working for Terry, and I asked, you know, I mean, why would I do this? And then he gave me the script and I read it and, you know, and then he told me Shelley Duvall was going to be in it. And I did, yeah, okay. What is that supposed to mean? Lure me on set? I don't really think. Anyway, so I took the role and I read the script. And I agreed to do it. It sounded fun to be a Greek king.
Well, cool. Well, that was a great answer.
And I heard it was your job or your idea to do the magic.
Well, yes, I knew a few magic tricks. And when you're working with a kid, you have to entertain them because they kind of clam up. And this kid in particular had some issues. So
how'd you make the coin noise when you dropped the?
Well, basically, I got an erection, and it was a brass table.
All right.
I was just going to say there has to be an erection in this movie.
Good. Well, thanks for coming out, Sean. It's nice to talk to you.
It's always nice to talk to you, Sean.
Anytime, fellas.
Okay.
I got some mutton in the oven if you want some.
Okay. Well, that's good. He was a lot nicer this time. I'm glad he came out.
Yeah, he was in a good mood.
Yeah, you never know. I mean,
he was in a good mood. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to do that in front of Josh, but Josh is crying right now, so... I guess it's not that bad.
Mission success.
All right. Well, that was good.
Scary.
I didn't, you know, like I said, it's cool that he did. It is cool that he dictated the part because it did give the movie a little.
It gave the movie some star power.
It did,
for sure.
You know, it, mm-hmm. like I said, well, he was I love John Cleese. I love Monty Python.
He wasn't actually.
Oh, Cleese was
top bill.
Yeah,
which was weird, and because I guess
Johnny Good
he was in it legitimately for 2 minutes.
They were probably trying to keep it a secret, right?
Well, what I read was that for some reason this movie took the idea of giving the cameo actors the first billing, and for some reason I don't know understand because I don't believe it was alphabetical because Cleese is. I don't think that comes before Connery, but because I don't know. But anyway,
I think you're right.
L before O, so Cleese would come before Connery. But
well, no, because I'm talking about last names, and I can't remember was it a K or a C? Because
no, it's C.
Is it C? Cleese okay, so Connery. There we go. I didn't remember the spelling, but anyway, that's what they decided to do. So Cleese got top billing, and then it just went from there. You know.
Well, but yeah, it would make sense if Connery's got second billing, then that theory would make sense.
Yeah,
he'd be the second.
Yeah, because he would have been, and he wasn't. So anyway.
No, he was. So it goes Cleese, Connery, Duvall.
No,
so.
I think in the script they wrote it that they wanted when he took his helmet off for it to be this big reveal that it was like a Sean Connery-like person, and then one of the producers Connery.
Yeah, that's exactly. He just ended up with the script, and the producer or the agents did the rest. But no, that was great. I mean, his character was cool, you know. I mean, it was okay.
I just wish the boy was going back through time and not having all this weird devil god stuff because it was just so. I don't know. It was. I don't use this word often, but it was silly to me.
Yeah.
Like it just didn't add anything to the movie to me. That when he was jumping through time, it was really cool. When Napoleon was awesome. Robin Hood was awesome. Seeing that kind of stuff was cool. But when it got into like the giant head floating around and then the devil shocking, it was just like the comedy aspects to it didn't make up for. How I didn't really like the movie, so
I don't know. I kind of felt a little bit opposite with that because I had a hard time watching this. The first time I watched it was about 5 years ago, and I shut it off shortly after the Napoleon part.
Oh.
And then this time I was like, okay, I have to watch it. So
yeah, that's what this podcast does.
Usually, you were forced to watch things.
So I got past it, and I love Terry Gilliam. I just had a hard time with this one. But then I got past it, and I love the third act of it. It kind of needed that devil evil guy character too. But like where they're like hanging from the cage.
Yeah.
And then when the evil guy's just taking everyone on.
Yeah.
And like it was just great set design and just fun effects and it was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
almost Beetlejuicy with
totally.
That one set part where he's turning around.
Yeah, he's the pincushion.
Yeah.
And he's got the knife that comes out of his head.
That's what I was going to bring up because I'm sitting here going, this guy is not human. He is clearly some sort of creation because that thing was like about a foot and a half that just comes right out of the middle of his head.
Yeah.
And like this extension comes out because I didn't know what the hell he was in the beginning, but that like solidified the fact that, okay, he's not human.
I liked how it was just like this drawn out thing just to cut the ropes, you know, it was just like,
weed,
and then it was like,
just cut all the ropes and they just went flying.
Yeah.
See that the ending, you know, not to jump to the ending, but that actually was my least favorite part was the ending.
Oh, really?
It was. I mean, I think it's just because
You're talking about the ending, ending the with the fireman?
Yeah, with the whole thing.
I hated it.
Oh, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about
the microwave or the whatever. The, it made the toaster oven?
Yeah, I mean, that. For me,
it really did start with, you know, the big reveal that, you know, he just, they lure
him. Oh, you mean when,
back,
like, God shows up and God's, yeah, just like, you know what? Yeah, evil.
The whole fight,
shit,
scene was,
yeah,
kind of stupid. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really enjoy the ending. I get the silliness. I mean, I did enjoy watching it, but as when you, like, sit back at it, I mean, I like the whole movie all the way until about that part, because then it got over the top.
Okay, so there's, like, so there's now, like, an orphaned child movie that doesn't have parents. I don't understand the ending. What is the little kid? The little kid's parents explode, and then what? That's it?
Because he touched the evil.
Mom! Dad! It's evil! Don't touch it!
I understand. That rock, like, survived, so this little, yeah, kid has no parents now. He doesn't live with Agamemnon or whatever. And
that was hilarious, well, too, because at the end, he just kind of winks at him and drives off.
Yeah.
I know. Like, so now this little kid, like, has no parents. His parents just blow up in front of him.
All he has is the pictures.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, they were mean, but they were there. So I don't.
Terry Gilliam was insistent on that ending. I think he was really inspired by Roald Dahl and, like, the just kind of. They did a test screening, and they did it with, he's like, let's see what the kids think about it. And then the kids come out, like, the first person they interviewed, what was your favorite part? When the parents blew up. He's like, see?
So, yeah. The parents blew up.
Yeah, you gotta put yourself in the perspective of being a kid.
Because we all want our parents to blow up.
Most, yeah, of us didn't see this when we were kids, so it's hard, yeah, for us to, but, like, they, you know.
Maybe, I guess that's maybe true. I didn't see, because I do know the parents were jerks for sure, but maybe, right, I didn't see as much.
They didn't deserve that. But,
well, like, I mean, they were talking about, they had the weird, like, electronic stuff, like we've seen. I didn't understand. But is it the future? They were, like,
the parents?
Yeah, they had, like, these weird.
They were just obsessed with their devices.
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
Which was, like, blenders and toaster ovens.
But that, yeah, that, like, solidifies.
And so it was.
The hatred.
I feel, to me, it was more of, like, they were more interested in their devices than their, oh, child, yeah, which, yes, sucks.
Because he was still.
But that doesn't, like. Oh, it doesn't make it okay to explode these parents' head and have a kid be orphaned. Well, I just didn't. As an adult,
if you think about it,
doesn't make sense to me at all.
When the whole thing, the scenario comes back, and I mean, he at the very end, he's like, "Don't leave me! Don't leave me!" And the smoke is, and then that's when they transition to he wakes up and there's a fire in the house, and then Sean Connery saves him, brings him outside, and the parents can give a shit less that he's been saved. You know, so they're kind of they're already kind of like making it. Yeah, they don't care.
Well, she's like crying, and then like
she's trying to go back in for some shit.
Yeah, she's like, let me in there. I want to get the blender.
Yeah, she cares more about the devices. Like you were saying.
Okay, that's true. So I think maybe I just didn't focus on the parents at the beginning because it was more of just like
they've got those thick British accents. So they're
stay quiet up there. It was more just the kid. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't know. So that's a good point.
So then at the end, you're kind of almost glad that they got exploded because you're like, God damn, they didn't even give a shit about
I rewinded it. And I was, they exploded twice. It didn't make sense either time. I was like, how did I just see that right? And I rewinded it. I was like, no, these guys just exploded.
And then it ended.
It seems like Connery didn't save him or anything. He just drove off.
And it seems like God orchestrated it. You know, like God was like, hey, I put a little bit of evil in your toaster oven so your parents will blow up. And then the guy that looks like the king that you want to live with, he's going to drive away.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem fucked up?
Good luck with life.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't it be funny if he just kind of goes, hop on the engine with me and let's take
off? That would be a different story.
Be better, you know?
But, that would have been like the answer. Yeah, like, just answer it. But not just leave this little kid with no parents and, you know?
And his neighborhood looking at him.
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know why it affected me that much, but it did. Like, his house burned down. His parents just exploded.
Yeah.
And this little kid's what? He's got nothing.
And did you notice when they were like panning out, you know, like leaving the planet Earth, like you can see his parents are just little piles of smoke.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah,
walking
little rebels.
Up to him,
yeah.
You know?
And he still goes, Mom?
Yeah.
Dad?
Mom? Dad?
Mom?
Like, yeah. Dad? Like, you didn't need to. You just saw him blow up.
I don't know. Like I said, there was cool parts. Like, you know, the wall part was fantastic, and there was some pretty cool special effects, but I just don't... I didn't think the movie... I wouldn't recommend it to a friend, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It was an ice pirate movie to me.
I don't mind watching it.
I would never have turned it off. I would have watched all the way through because I would have been stuck on it.
Yeah.
But I don't, it just, I don't know.
What
as
I will
far as
say
the movie
is,
goes, it wasn't.
The cold open and the way they like explain things at the beginning doesn't help it. But if they did a better job, kind of like, you know, like we said about Dune, then maybe it could be better. Because I feel like the second half of the movie is fun. Like once they like, you know, get past the history that's supposed to be like real history, and they're like, oh, I'm on like a ship with an ogre and a Mrs. Ogre,
yeah,
you know, And then they...
I can't...
Yeah, speaking of which, by the way, the ship turns into a hat for a giant, by the way.
That was great.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That and was stupid, stabbing but in the top of the head. Super hilarious. All of a sudden, like, this fucking thing just comes out, and it's a hat. I mean, come on. And then, like, what are they doing? They're putting some sort of, like, sleeping potion in his thing, and they're stuffing it into this dude's head, and he falls asleep. Put it in the bellows.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
I thought it was great.
I'm using
I thought
Chris's word. Hilarious. I don't know.
Yeah.
That part. You have to be a kid to appreciate it.
You're right. That's where the kid aspect comes in.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it like the best rating, but
all right, let's do it then. What are you going to give it?
Well, no, hold on.
There's more to say.
we can give it ratings and still talk about it.
Yeah. I just love the being an adult, you know, like it's different, like the relationship between Mr. Ogre and Mrs. Ogre.
Right.
You know, and he's like, it's because I grew up too fast. You know, it's like he's got all these sores. And I was just like,
what is going on?
Yeah. And then when she's like, what do I do? And she's like, you know, like terrify them. And then she's like getting all like flirty. She's like, and leer at them.
Yeah.
You know, like you used to. And he's like, yeah, like he's getting an ogre boner, you know. Ogre boner. And then he just starts doing this kind of like, am I doing it right? Kind of like scaring, like, whoa. Like all that. I was like, dude, this is hilarious. I thought it was funny
and
as fuck.
Putting these two movies that we've just done side by side and knowing that this one had a $5 million budget and the other one had a 15,
yeah,
I feel that the sets were amazing. I mean,
yeah.
Even when Napoleon is taking over, you know, the battle of something, I can't remember what it was called, but I mean, that whole thing and the extras were everywhere. And then you go to Agamemnon's, you know, palace or whatever. And mm-hmm. I mean, everything's tangible, everything's real. And like, you know, the whole, the scale of it, and then not to mention getting this pirate ship, and they're on this, I'm assuming it's real. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the effect was good enough and made me think it was real.
You know where they saved the money? Was all that like plastic fruit inside that cow that got cut in half?
Yeah.
No, you know where they actually saved money? There was this scene that they had. It was going to be really elaborate, and they ran out of money. And so they were like, well, how do we get them from here to the evil dude's castle? So what they do is... they just throw the skull or whatever at the plate of invisible glass,
and
it shatters. And like, that's how we'll get them there.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And that's literally what they had to do. They're like, we ran out of...
Well, the money...
You know, it's funny. I didn't think about that either. It's like, oh, cool. Well, that's one way to get there.
Yeah.
Like, it was fine.
They were already there. They just had to do that.
And that was a hilarious scene. They come up to this glass scene, and they're just smushing their faces up against this glass. Like, that's what you would do.
Well, and apparently I read, like, the lead dwarf, who's the actor's name was... like David Rappaport or something like that.
Yeah, Randall.
Randall. He was apparently in reality so arrogant with his like role in this movie, you know, that he didn't like accept any camaraderie with any of the other little people. And it kind of led to this awkwardness to where like they kind of started to resent him because he was like, no, I'm better than you. You know, like I have my own trailer kind of. I mean, I don't know if that's, I'm just kind of, you know.
Yeah, well, no, all the dwarves' characters were written literally for their own personalities. Apparently, like, you know.
So I guess that scene though, where like they are sick of Randall's shit and like his like, you know, like no, that, like follow me, like we're doing this, you know.
That's this all.
And then he throws the skull at them, like that was all like a real like high tension, you know, like
right.
Reality, like a feud going on between all the actors.
Yeah, because I guess he wouldn't like socialize with them between takes.
Or after, you know, filming or whatever.
And they actually resented him for it. So that makes sense. Yeah, all the you know, animosity that they had kind of went to a head there. But that was hilarious, though. I mean, that whole transition there just...
Yeah,
you know,
you know, you're working with your limitations. Sometimes you get something better.
Well, I feel like it's the same kind of thing with the... when they is it after the Titanic, like when they end up in the upside down world or whatever, when it's like woot woot and like they kind of splash, like it's like they just jumped in a pool and they like put the negatives or like did like a negative film on it and just had them going up into the water kind of.
Oh yeah,
I do recall that.
It's like right before really they end up in the cage, I feel like, or something like that.
I forgot they were on the Titanic.
They're on the Titanic.
And that's another scene that made me like laugh, because I, you know, which I had to bring up again, because before, I think it was the second world that they jumped into, was like, which I wanted to know what the guy's problem was, his personal problem, because, you know, Pansy, They end up diving down in this carriage, you know, and like they're talking about,
I need love fruit.
Me. You love me. Exactly. And he keeps talking about this personal problem that he has. And she's like, oh, and the personal problem?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's much better now.
Pansy, no more worries now. Pansy.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I want to know what that personal problem is. At first, I thought it was, you know, obviously a downstairs problem. But I mean, I guess fruit helps with that. So, but why would you have an erection when things are going wrong? You know, you're just like, I need fruit. You know, it's like,
I think it's more like he has the shits.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was.
That's how I read it. Probably because it was a kid's movie. That's what
Yeah. It had, yeah, that's true. It had gone that route.
Michael Palin. Is that him?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And they were like, what, star-crossed lovers? They kept showing up in all the timelines.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, different characters.
Characters, yeah.
Yeah, and on the Titanic, you know, he's like got that like growth on his nose.
Of course I love you.
You don't mind the thing on the end of my nose?
Oh, you mean your...
Yes, my...
No, darling. Don't be silly. Everyone has something odd about them.
Yes.
Well, I've got an enormous...
Pansy.
And then they all land on him and his toupee comes off. And then she's like, I thought that was funny. It's like, wow. Like that shows a lot about her. Like, you know, she's willing to kiss this guy with a, you know, just a growth on his
nose.
But the minute he has a toupee, she's just like, ah,
I'm out. Yeah. That was an interesting scene though, because I guess they constructed this whole like scaffolding system and like, they made it look like they were supposed to fall without actually falling on them. And that's originally what the shot ended up. But I guess Gillian wanted to show him like directly and how it worked. So he gets up on the scaffolding and like shows him and actually falls on them instead, you know? So I guess he didn't really show him how to do it, but you know, in the end result that it did what it was supposed to do.
You know, I read too, like Shelley Duvall, who was mostly famous for The Shining and she was also in Popeye.
Oh yeah.
But
right.
She did the movie because, well, not because, but she was convinced to do the movie because Connery was in it. She was a real Connery fan. So
she played.
It must crush her heart to hear him talk about her. Like,
right. Oh, that's too bad. It's too bad.
I was surprised he said that. So Wyatt, did you know this movie was the rated 10th best movie in 1981? How many movies came out in 1981? Because it was probably 11.
Well, I mean, okay, so you got 10 movies there. Like, I mean, we know that Raiders of the Lost Ark came out. I thought it was cool that, like, you know, I mean, like, when we did Willow, remember how we talked about, like, how it kind of seemed like George Lucas gave the cast and crew of, like, you know, Endor, like, their own movie?
Yeah,
I mean, like,
exactly.
Watched them during the lunch break, and he was like, hey, make a movie out of this, you know? This kind of seemed like it was, like, cool. It's like, this is a feature movie with, a bunch of little people who are all good actors.
Exactly.
And all have this, like, you know, personality that comes through in their roles.
And I have to be honest, I mean, I couldn't tell you any other Kenny Baker films. So being able to see him act on screen, and I actually really loved his character. So, I mean, I definitely enjoyed the movie for that aspect as well. Finally being able to see him out of the R2-D2.
Yeah. And his character was Fidget.
Yes.
Is that who he was? He was hilarious. With
Fidget.
Like, his strainer on his head. Which actually is like a religious cap these days.
He was super nice though.
I don't know, Malcolm Dixon, who played Strutter, he was the one that like popped out of the closet with the machine gun and just shot. I mean, his character was hilarious. I mean, just he was the one.
Was that he was also like, the one that like ate the rat?
Yes.
And he's all like, might be the last meal.
Yeah, I believe that was him. Yeah, I mean, his character was just nuts. And I wanted to bring
a pretty
up
funny line.
I loved the whole cage scenario. I think it was him that actually gets out and with the knife and cuts it all up, and they're constructing this crazy rope scenario.
Yeah.
And they use it as a crazy pulley system to, like, you know, just rope themselves all the way across all these cages to get out. And I'm like, what the fuck then am I watching here? I mean, it was a bitchin' scene. I really enjoyed that. That was probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole thing because it was just so inventive. And like, they just literally mentioned like maybe 10 minutes ago how they're like, we need to go back to making ropes, you know, and then they're like, blah, and he just made all this shit like right away.
Yeah, and it was really, the set design was so simplistic there. It was nice. It was just all just like a black void that they were in. So, you know, they probably weren't that far off the ground when they were filming it, but it looked like, and with the sound design, it just felt like it was just this massive, endless pit that they would fall into. So it was cool.
That's movie magic, man. I love
it. It makes me wonder, like, because it looks so good, like, I wonder if they started originally with their tuxedos didn't get bleached out, and like they were still in black tuxedos, but they, you know, like when they're in that scene, like the white tuxedos like look so good, you know, like in that black void, right, swinging from, you know, cage to cage.
Yeah. I mean, that, yeah.
It's a good contrast for sure.
No, I mean, the castle scene was good, like I said, up until it got to, like, you know, the...
What, when, like, the crazy Grim Reaper hook-handed...
Those guys were nuts! And with the big, like, skeleton heads, yeah, and the, yeah, shrieking, and, cow, like, heads, they're running around. I mean, those guys were just crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, it's like, what the hell, what were they? And they were, like, this little henchman guy.
There was so much random shit where he's just like, I'll turn you into a dog, bleh, in, like, yeah, just, like, a modern, like, dog, you know?
Yeah.
the pig.
Yeah, the pig. And then, like, you know, when they all show up with, like, the different Arad weaponry, you know, it's like, oh, hey, look, he's got a tank. And then, wait, he's got a spaceship?
Yeah,
why didn't you just bring a bunch of spaceships, you know? waste your time with cowboys and Indians.
See, that's the part when, I mean, I was like, I wish I was a kid when I was watching this part, because I could just tell you got cowboys and,
yeah,
spaceships.
It was everything.
And archers, yeah, and knights.
Yeah,
and
it'd be everything. It's like all the Legos that they sell. Like,
totally.
Yeah, you know, totally. Like, exactly.
When you play with your toys.
See, but you're right. I mean, because we do this podcast for that reason. It's like, you know, we watch these movies as 30-somethings when, you know, most of these movies came out when we were, like, in our, you know, first 10 years of age. And you forget, like what you said, it's like, this movie was meant for a kid. So when I'm watching the end sequence and I'm like, fuck, this is so stupid. And then I'm like, oh, okay.
Some movies,
that's right. It's meant for, yeah, for kids and shit. So you got to think about it that way.
Some movies you can watch and think back like, oh, well, if I was a kid, I would really, and this movie, I couldn't put myself as a child, like, right, as a younger guy watching this movie thinking, yeah, this is so cool. You know? Like I said, there was some cool scenes, but I just, putting it all together.
But watching as an adult, I'm like, man, it's just so, you know, clumsy. Like,
yeah,
you just don't really like, give you any like information, like why are they working for the Supreme Being? Are they like, are they even human, you know? Because it's sure
they do explain that they,
yeah,
had,
they do,
really boring desk jobs,
yeah, and exactly,
then, but they knew about these loopholes, so they're, you know, going out on their own, and they know that they're trying to they don't want to get caught, basically.
Yeah,
well, it was funny because I actually did enjoy the Supreme Being who did show up. I mean, he was actually kind of funny, all the stuff that he was doing, but he did say he, like, you know, he did give them the map.
Well, of course you didn't mean to steal it. I gave it to you, you silly man. Mm-hmm.
You know, he gave him the map, and, you know, you guys, it was all basically, from what I understand, an experiment. Like, because, you know, he was all about there has to be evil.
Evil was an experiment.
Right, or evil was the experiment.
Because he's basically all-knowing, so he's like, well, yeah, I let you get the map.
Right.
Because I'm in control of everything.
Yeah.
And it was an experiment.
And he mentioned how he, like, yeah, you guys were actually pretty terrible robbers, you know? Yeah. And it was like, it was an experiment to see how evil would play out, I guess. So, yeah.
How long have you been robbing?
Since I was 4'1".
That was good.
4'1".
I do think, as far as the comedic level, John Cleese definitely took it. You know, yeah. I mean, that whole scene as Robin Hood, you know.
With this, yeah, dumb hat.
Yeah.
Stupid Robin Hood hat.
But, yeah. That, I mean, ridiculous fucking Robin Hood hat.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
Oh. I think the reason why it was so funny was his introduction when he comes out and he says, "Oh, hello," you know. It's just like, okay.
Well, because he didn't know what they were going to be. He thought, yeah, there, you, yeah, thought there was some, like, this really badass group of just, like, you know, gangsters, oh, yeah, out there.
I guarantee you, if you, like, go into that movie watching it again and you see that scene and you accept it for what it is, which is like Monty Python shit, you will, like, think it's way more hilarious than, like, the first time you saw it. Because it is, dude. It's like the way he's, like, you know, he's just condescending and he's just like, jolly good, jolly. Like, it's all bullshit, you know? Like, but that's what it's supposed to be. He's supposed to be like a condescending Robin, yeah, Hood, you know?
I didn't put the Monty Python
aspect
collaboration
involved
together. Yeah, yeah. I didn't. But now that I think about it, it totally was. Almost all the comedy in it was that type, yeah, of comedy.
And I think that's, like, you know, we have to put that in perception, that when we see these as 30-somethings, that a second viewing most likely is definitely necessary.
Most of the movies we do, yeah, seem like they need a second viewing. So can,
but
I love
watching that way, the first time going in blind. You know,
can I ask Josh his ratings now?
Yeah. Let's hit the ratings up.
Actually, as we've been talking, it went up by 1 point.
that's what we do.
So I just want to say I love Terry Gilliam, the later stuff he did especially, and it's really fun seeing the director this early on and seeing what carries over into his later work.
Yeah.
But I don't have the nostalgia factor like Wyatt does. I'm going to give it a 6.
Solid.
Yeah. Actually, that's the same exact rating I was going to give it. I felt it was a very enjoyable movie. I mean, even though, like, I didn't understand most of what was happening, But you know, I mean, the enjoyment level and the entertainment value is still there.
Yeah.
You know, so I was not bored with the movie. Like Wyatt said, it's like it changes continuously through the film, so you're not like going, when the fuck is something else gonna, you know? So I didn't have that. So yeah, a 6 for me as well. I agree.
What about you, Chris?
I didn't talk myself up a point, so I'm gonna stick with the 5 that Funk side of this. there was some cool parts. There was some interesting things. I did like the Sean Connery scene. So there was things that kept me going, like Jason said. The ending alone just pisses me off. Literally, you don't rewind endings very often, and I rewinded to make sure I saw the parents explode because I still don't understand.
Yeah.
The whole Sean Connery thing. I don't know. I guess the ending alone makes it a 5 to me, just because it was just such a stupid way to end. If he would have got on the thing with Sean Connery, it would have been fine.
Yeah, then it would have been a 6.
The fact that they just left it that way, even to chill. I hear what Josh was saying. It totally makes sense what Josh was saying about the kids, but I didn't. You know, I just didn't like. So I'll give it a 5.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd give it a 6.5, and that's just, you know, the 0.5 is basically like taking the nostalgia factor that you guys don't have,
right,
and tacking it on to what I think is a solid 6 movie.
Yeah.
Terry Gilliam made another movie, like, I don't know if it became, I think it might be after this one. It was called The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and it's like,
that was a mouthful.
It's like all whimsy. So it's crazy, like it's way more kid centric than this one. Like this one is like trying to be a kid movie, but it still kind of has adult elements. Baron Munchausen is like way more kids movie, but it's got some adult elements. Hmm. So we might watch that because I don't think you guys have seen that.
Oh, hell no.
I think I was kind of thinking like Time Machine.
Time
Machine. When you said Time Bandits, because I thought about it, I was like, man, I think I've seen this before. But I think it was Time Machine I was thinking about.
You mean with like
Because there were actual Time Bandits.
With like the Minox? It was
like Ice Pirates to me. Yeah, no, the one where he actually has a time machine. He goes, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And Weena?
Yeah, his wife always dies. That's a good
one. Guys always bring up Ice Pirates in every podcast. Is that like the bar, like the low bar?
That's the low bar for sure.
That's the worst movie.
The worst movie they've made me sit through, without a doubt.
Dude, at the end of it, you said you kind of liked it.
Well, after we podcasted about it. That's what this podcast does.
Yeah.
But I like to rate movies on if I would tell a buddy to watch them, and I don't think I would with Time Bandits. I wouldn't be like, hey, you got like, hey, my buddy Cooper, you got to watch this movie.
Right.
I just don't see. But with Clash of the Titans that we did last time, I do see that. There's so many parts in the movie where like you got to watch this. This is cool. If you enjoy movies like we do here, you'll enjoy this movie. Time Bandits isn't that way. There's not a scene or a, you know. The wall doesn't save it to me.
If you're a comedy fan, though, it's especially a Monty Python fan, it's worth watching the John Cleese scene. And there's certain
definitely points, there's
on YouTube.
You're right. There are reasons to watch it.
Yeah, definitely watch it
on DVR YouTube. Or something.
Maybe in Zoom. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I still think there's some value there. You know,
I think it was a fine pick.
No, I actually
enjoy watching it. I don't mind watching it. That's the point of this whole podcast. Is I want to see these movies that you watch when you're a kid.
But like, if I would have talked about it enough, like in one sitting, I probably would have like started lumping it into not that it's as good, but it was in the kind of, you know, type of movie when I was a kid that is like Explorers and Goonies.
It was kind of He-Man-y to me. You know, so I can see where if you liked He-Man, you know, like it had that kind of.
But it was there. It was like one of those movies that like came on TV every once in a while, and I like sit there and I go like, oh, this is like, you know, it like had this, you know, unique '80s feel to it, you know, like especially the scenes with at the end with Evil and all the, you know, the things he's taken on, pincushioning off the arrows and shit like that. Like that was all really weird stuff that, like, you know, like when I saw it again, I'm like, well, I'm having like a nostalgic, you know, like flashback right now.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I personally don't think it's a movie that's that terrible. But so, Chris, it's not worthy to bag on in a new extent because I mean, I enjoyed it. Anyway, I say let's close this bad boy out. And Chris, you think you might have a pick. So
I don't know. I've been thinking about it. I think I'm going to try. We'll just say Drop Dead Fred. For now.
Oh, wow. Oh, you know what? I have not seen that movie.
I think that's a good pick.
I think that's a fantastic pick. So let's do that. I think that's great. All right, so let's close this bad boy out. So thanks for joining us for another episode of Cinestash Rehash. I have to plug it again because I always do recently now. Please follow us on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And yeah, that's about all I have to say. Rate, review the show. We would love that. So thank you, and we'll catch us next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Cinema Stash Rehash. Be sure to give us some awesome iTunes reviews, like us on Facebook, don't forget to check out past episodes, and join us next time on Cinema Stash Rehash.